And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.
What's going on, Rip City? This is the Trailing Blazers podcast. I am your host, Dan Morang. As always, you can find us on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, also a part of Blog Talk Radio on iTunes. Make sure you subscribe. Get us on Twitter at Trailing Blazers. And if I can stop stumbling over myself just in time to introduce my co-host today, it's the Grand Poobah himself, Chris Axman, the godfather of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. Chris, great to have you, man.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to be on. It's good to talk some Blazers with you. I'm a big fan of what you do here and over at Blazers Edge. Bigger fan of what you do on Trailing Blazers, though. But, you know, that's just me.
It's the unbiased opinion. So here in Portland, it's been a busy 24 hours. The trade has officially gone through the NBA. Mason Plumlee and a second-round pick have been sent off to the Denver Nuggets for Mr. Yusuf Nurkic and a first-round pick that belongs to the Memphis Grizzlies. That pick right now is slated to be anywhere between 17 and 23, so if you want to pick a number, it's probably about the 20th. What say you about this pick and or about this trade? And I know you've got your own personal feelings about one of the 37 Plumlees.
I want to start with, there's no way that this could be a bad trade for Portland. Whereas with Denver, I think that it could have some serious cap consequences. And also Plumlee, there's that whole thing where if you're in the NBA, you're one of the best 500 NBA or basketball players on earth. But relative to other NBA players, I think Plumlee is so bad. And I can't stand watching his game, and he's super athletic, but I just think that he always makes the wrong decision. So I think that it's probably good to not have him starting. Not sure that Nurkic is better, but he certainly could be. And then you add that first round pick to it. And I think now the Trailblazers have three first round picks this upcoming year. And whether or not you want to go with your talent evaluation, your scouting, which I think in the past has been generally positive for the Blazers. I think the Blazers do a good job of scouting. Or if you want to bundle that together for a player or for a higher pick, I think it'll probably be good in the end for the Blazers, especially if you don't think that they should be trying to make the playoffs, which it's my understanding that you do not think that they should be.
Oh, I said this the other day, and this, if I wanted to paint a perfect picture of this, I think of the Kool-Aid man jumping through the wall of the Blazers ceiling, riding an M1 Abrams tank, screaming, "Oh yeah." Because this,
I thought the perfect picture of this was that GIF that you always post on Twitter and
Tank
in our
City?
Slack.
Yeah.
I love that.
I mean, it's so perfect because it describes everything that's happening right now for Portland. Evan Turner is basically, you can write him off for the season. He could come back in time, but for all intents and purposes, just shut him down. There's no reason to bring him back.
It's funny because like he's only been a positive thing for the Blazers
the past month.
For what, like 2 weeks?
About a month now.
Okay, so about a month. And then as soon as he finally starts to be a positive asset, he's gone.
that's Portland in a nutshell this season. Like, they get something right, but they give it up almost immediately. But, I mean, you look at this deal for Plumlee. Whether or not you like, love, hate, dislike Mason Plumlee, he was a valuable part of this team in how they execute offensively. So
I don't think so. I think he was an anchor. And not the good anchor. I think that he weighed down the
offense.
Anchor
that drags you down and sucks your soul.
I'm sorry?
It's this kind of anchor that drags you down and sucks your soul.
Well, so that type of anchor, but also Look, I get the idea that it's nifty to have a distributor at the center position, but you have two all-star point guards, and they're I think for both of those players, and honestly, I think they're both point guards. They just both happen to be starting, which, you know, isn't the biggest deal, but whatever. All of that aside, the ball should be in their hands, because now I think that the league has started to realize that having a non-offensive threat distributing the ball sort of sucks. I mean, you want whoever is distributing the ball on any given possession to attract attention from the defense. And I mean, how many open Mason Plumlee 12-foot jumpers have you seen just clank off the rim, and it starts a rebound and a fast break, and then, you know, the other team scores in transition, and Plumlee is nowhere to be seen. Yes.
Trust me, I've gone off on those jumpers and the ill-advised shots plenty, but the way the roster was constructed, he had to be that guy. As much as I've faulted Mason Plumlee for his shortcomings, over the last year, I've kind of come to the point where I've also complimented him on a lot of things, because personally, I've always been of the belief that as the player that he is, if he's coming off the bench, he's one of the better, if not the top tier of backup bigs in the NBA. If he's matching up against a guy off the bench, chances are he's going to be bigger, stronger, faster, more athletic, and has a higher IQ than almost any of those other guys. He's extremely athletic. He's very mobile. He works harder than almost anybody I've ever seen in the NBA. I mean, the dude doesn't let up. When you say that almost everyone takes possessions off in the league, he's a guy like another guy here in Portland, like Wes Matthews, who just doesn't take possessions off. And I think that's an underrated skill and something that is incredibly valuable coming off the bench. But for Portland, that's a luxury. That's not a need right now. They need a legit defender. They need legit size. They need somebody who's going to eat up space with the way Coach Stotts runs his system. I mean, if you look at the successful defenses that Terry Stotts has coached, it's been with defenders that are elite on the perimeter and take up a ton of space inside. And people will counter that with, well, Tyson Chandler's a small guy, but the amount of space that he takes up with his mobility and his wingspan during that
season. Well, Tyson Chandler's not a small guy.
No, that's what I mean. But I mean, he's not heavy in the sense that
he's spacey. I guess. Okay, yeah. Sure.
Yeah. With the way Portland plays defense, you need to have one or the other. You need to have a severe girth where you can take up and eat up a ton of space, or be extremely mobile and have the length to compensate. Mason Plumlee was pretty mobile, but he didn't have the length to go with it. He was pretty big, but he didn't have the girth to really bang. So he's kind of caught in between on both sides. If he's taking on a guy like a Steven Adams, he gives it up in weight and length. If he's taking on a guy like Cat, he's just not quick enough, and he can't push him off his spots because he's just not quite strong enough. And I think that was a problem that Portland was facing with him, and it put Mason Plumlee in a really bad position to succeed. Now, he's done some amazing things over the past couple of weeks and in the past year and a half. He's improved. There's no doubt about that. But the crux of this whole deal is that Mason Plumlee was not coming back to Portland. If he's coming back to Portland at the end of this season, Portland is in a position that I couldn't imagine them being in. I mean, if he got more than, I think, $14 or $15 million, the Blazers are looking at paying $2.50 for every dollar of Mason Plumlee's contract with the way the salary cap breaks out. That's insane. That turns a $15 million guy into a $40 million guy a year as far as what Paul Allen is paying. And then that limits what you can do if you become a repeater in the luxury tax penalties. So there's all these ramifications that come up as a part of this. So bare minimum at the end of the season, you're losing him. And if you're going to lose him, try to get something for him. And I've been, you know, riding this train for a while. If you can get a first round pick for Mason Plumlee, I don't care where it's at, take it. Because if nothing else, maybe you hit a home run with a young asset, or even get a backup player. I mean, you're not going to do anything else with it. So the fact that they swung that for him and Nurkic, I'm stoked.
Yeah. I agree. And I think that first round pick, especially in the Nuggets' eyes, that was the backbone of the deal. I think everyone knows that Nurkic has a ton of upside. I mean, as a rookie, we saw that. Everyone was really excited. And I mean, the fact that he was starting at the start of the season, despite Jokic's year and the improvement that he had over last season, you know, indicates something. I think Nurkic has some upside. But this year, he has been absolutely atrocious. I mean, one of the worst center who actually was getting minutes, and you certainly didn't trade for his production right now.
No.
And it definitely may end up being the case that he was a negative asset, that he will be a negative asset. Honestly, it's hard for me to predict.
A negative asset of $2 million what does that cost a team? I mean, in the pantheon of moves to make, you're taking a flyer on a guy that's making $2 million a year. There's zero risk in that. If anything, if you're Neil O'Shea right now, you're looking at this and you have two ways to go with this. I mean, at least in my belief, you either start Nurkic or you start Myers Leonard. Either way, they're both young guys that need minutes. You need to know by the end of this season, if either one of these guys are going to be with this franchise long-term. Nurkic,
Myers Leonard just needs to start hitting 40%+ from three to be viable, right?
Yeah. And I think a part of that comes to his injury over the past year with his shoulder, and the biggest part of it is mental confidence. I think the way that you look at this now is that Myers Leonard and Jusuf Nurkić are the centers. That's it. Ed Davis and Noah Vonleh are the power forwards.
Ugh.
And you if you play it like that, I think if you pair those guys up, you can be successful as far as development. And that should caveat that. Successful in development. And develop doesn't mean good development. It means you get to know what you get from either one of these guys. And that's what the Blazers need to figure out, because right now they've got Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. You know what you have in those guys. You're going to get 50 points, 37 to 38% combined three-point percentage, and 12 assists, 10 to 12 assists a night. And that's pretty staggering. That's a big chunk of your offense right now. That's roughly 50% of your points and 50% of your assists tied up in those two guys. So what are you going to get from everybody else? And that's what Portland needs to figure out coming down out of the All-Star break. Kind of going back to what you said about my feelings as far as this team tanking, this is the tank. This ties into Evan Turner. Evan Turner, don't come back this season. I'm glad you kind of figured it out, and I hope you get healthy, and I want you to get right, but shut it down, get healthy, get right for next season. Tank this thing out. Portland right now is slated for the 11th pick in the draft, but they're four losses outside of the top three. Four. Four losses from being in the golden land of draft picks. And the top 5 to 7 players in this draft, people are really high on. And it was, well, they're guards and wings. They're guards and wings. Well, guess what, folks? Guess which way this league is shading towards? Guards and wings.
Well, yeah, and I mean, there's also, I mean, Jonathan Isaac looks really great. Josh Jackson's going to be able to defend, I'm pretty sure, 1 through 5.
If not, at least 1 through 4.
He could probably defend 0 through 7. Yeah. I mean, he's got, you know, the physical attributes. He's got the hustle. He's got an understanding of the game. I mean, like, there are some really, really good guards in this upcoming draft. But you know, that doesn't mean that there aren't guys. Like, I mean, even if you ended up with like Hartenstein, a guy from Germany that, as a Dallas guy, I mean, he's a German power forward, so I've looked at him. He's slated to go like around the 20th pick, and I think he could be really, really good. So, wherever you're picking, I feel like this draft 1 through 20 is better than most drafts have been in a really long time. And then maybe 1 through 10. And I know people say this every year, but this is the first time I've said it, and I'm always right. since 2003, there probably hasn't been a similarly talented 1 through 10 if you aggregate, like average everyone's talent.
There may not be a legit Hall of Famer in this class, but there looks to be a ton.
Bolts, man. Bolts is so good.
Yeah. See, I keep looking at a guy like Lonzo Ball. And he's got that whack jumper, but those two guys, they have it factor. They could be all stars, but I look at this draft and I just see starters. I see a ton of NBA ready.
Yeah.
Two-way
exactly.
players.
And you
draft.
Don't have that at either of the big man positions. If you ask me, I mean, I would say that last year, one of the most important things that happened for the Blazers was figuring out that Aminu was a power forward. So I'm surprised that you didn't say, Aminu when you were listing those big men. But I mean, Aminu's jump shot is obviously really questionable. If he can figure that out, then he is a starting power forward, I think. But if he doesn't, then I mean, Plumlee wasn't a starting center. Sure. Like I'll grant that, but neither is Myers Leonard. Nurkic isn't yet, although he could be. Noah Vonleh is in my book. I'm like, I think he's just not going to cut it.
Yeah.
Maybe. But
with Vonleh is he's still a kid. I mean, he's literally still a kid. He's 22 years old. So, I mean, that's what's crazy about him.
You're right. You're right, but I'm losing confidence. That's
my point. No, I mean, when you've been in the league this long, you start to start questioning those things, even if he is a young big. With Aminu, particularly, the reason I didn't list him is because I just kind of consider him being that guy in the three or the four position. When people question Al-Farouq Aminu's jump shot, I nod and acknowledge and accept it. But what he does for this team defensively is huge. And that's why I keep kind of going back to Portland needs a guy at the three position that's a legit two-way player. If you look at the analytics of the NBA, the position in this league that has to be two ways is the three. If you're going to be successful in the NBA, look at every single top-flight team in this league. What do they all have in common? It's at the three position.
It's at the three position.
You have to play two ways. And people will say, well, the Clippers are successful. Really? What happens when their point guard or their power forward goes down? They don't have a two-way player at that position. Look at the Houston.
Also, Luka Mbamute, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world.
You got to play two ways.
It's okay.
Look at the Rockets. For all of the pub that Harden is getting and he's balling out of control, Trevor Ariza is a two-way player.
Yeah.
I mean, you can say absolutely. It with the Cavs. Yeah, it's LeBron. The Spurs, Kawhi Leonard. You pick which guy you say is the three in Golden State. Is it Klay? Is it KD? Is it Iggy? Is it Dre? I mean, any of those guys can plug and play at that position, but that's the point.
Yeah, all of the above.
It's the fact that these two-way guys, I love Dame and CJ. They're not two-way guys. Al-Farouq Aminu is a D guy. He is a lockdown defender. You plug a legit two-way player in at that three position, and maybe you've got something. And I think that Portland's best way to get that asset, because they don't grow on trees, is to drive this tank down the hill. And just ride it as hard as you can. I mean, if you think that you can package up that pick, you know, it comes a top five pick, and Indiana decides, hey, let's blow it up. Well, now you can go two ways. You can get a young asset on a cheap contract and kind of balance out the cupboard, so to speak, and write the checkbook. Or you can package that with Alan Crabb and clear enough salary cap to bring in a guy like Paul George. And I'm not saying Indiana's blowing it up, but you have a top three or top four pick in Alan Crabb in this year's draft, and the Pacers are struggling right now, and they want to keep a guy like Miles Turner, who's still really young. They've got to listen to that, right?
Well, I just think that Boston can beat that offer no matter what. I don't know.
Not even that particular deal, but this is, it gives you the ammunition to ask those questions legitimately and not have another general manager hang the phone up on you.
Yeah, and it might not be Paul George. It might be Derek Favors. It might be who's really good, but not as good as Paul George. it might be like, I was about to say Batum.
Yeah, let's not go ahead and touch Batum, because that one's still a sore subject.
I think Paul George is probably a higher caliber than the type of guy that you're taking a crack at. But yeah, I mean, point made. As far as I can tell, and I've thought about this like up and down, left and right. If you want Portland to make Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum work, there's no reason why it couldn't. But if you want it to be elite, if you're a tanking guy, Dan, then I guess like ultimately want a championship, and just being good is probably not your personal aspiration for this team. So running with that, I would think that the route to getting a top 10 defense for this Trailblazers team is either get Rudy Gobert, easy, fixed, whatever. Start Air Bud at power forward and you're going to have a top five defense. It's fine. Or rather, if you can't get Rudy Gobert, since he is a, you know, generationally good defender, you know, that's maybe out of your hands as far as just stumbling on someone like that. Then 3 through 5, I mentioned Derek Favors. So, I mean, what, like Derek Favors, Nerlens Noel, and at small forward, I mean, maybe Aminu or Harkless, one of the two, just three guys, or, you know, if you could get Isaac in this upcoming draft, that'd be great. But just three guys who can basically play 3-on-5 defense, right?
They had to do essentially enough to cover up. That's the thing, is at the back end or on the perimeter, you need to have an all-world defender to cover up for Damian and CJ. That's just what it comes down to.
If you have two guards who are dying on screens, then you need two of those guys. Probably three.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Or one Rudy Gobert. So crazy, and that's why you have to have... And the thing is, you can't just throw three defenders that can't produce anything offensively out there with Damian CJ, because then what do they do? I mean, the offense just falls apart. And that's why you've got to get that two-way guy somewhere. And that's why I keep going back to getting that wing. And that's what makes this so ridiculous. And that's why I keep going back to, well, the only way you're going to get that is the tank. Because you need the assets either to draft him or to trade for him to bring him in. Because the way the roster currently sits, you don't have the money to make the move. So unless you can offload Allen Crabbe, Myers Leonard, Mo Harkless, and everybody else, and Evan Turner, and everybody you just signed for nothing but assets and cheap deals, there's no way to make this happen to bring that guy in a lopsided trade or in free agency. So you're basically saying that you have to go through the draft.
Yeah, it's a shame that you guys didn't seize the Nerlens Noel opportunity while it was there. If I was Neil O'Shea, I would have made sure that happened, because it certainly appears that he's – I mean, they certainly don't have the urgency to move him that they used to. I wouldn't say he's off the table, but
you
either have to tank, find the – two-way wing equivalent of CJ McCollum with the 15th pick in the draft, which is not an easy thing to do. maybe get someone to do something stupid. But, what I'll give you, though, is that I don't think you necessarily need to tank if you want to try to approach that 60-win real contender threshold. The best way to do it, the most... you know, the way that you can be most confident that it's a real possibility is probably tanking. I'll give you that. Right. I mean, would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, if you dissociate yourself from fandom, which is something I think I've always done, because I'm disassociated
from this universe, man. I've severed my mortal coil. I'm in the ether right now,
but
I'm a Mavs fan. Come on.
Yeah, this is true. But hey, you know, you got one from us. So it's one of those things where I just sit here and kind of left. And I'm sitting here with the starters on in the background, and unbelievably, three of the four guys are picking the Blazers to beat the Hawks tonight. So that's the kind of world we live in right now. But if you dissociate completely from this, tanking, in whether you agree with it or don't agree with it, is mathematically the best way to go about this. It's fact. Unless you have the magic ability to suddenly conjure free agents to take less money to come play in Portland, it is the only way to get around this. And that's been true in Portland always. That's how they got Damian Lillard. It's how they got CJ McCollum. It's how they got Alan Crabb. It's how they got Will Barton, who they traded away. It's how they got Nick Batum, who they traded away. So, I mean, you talk about all the assets that have been in Portland. LaMarcus Aldridge, lost. Brandon Roy, retired. Greg Oden, retired. Every single one of these guys has been drafted. So, and people will say, well, they traded for those picks. That's the point, is you bring in these assets and you hit home runs with them. Whether you like or don't what Neil O'Shea has done with this team through contracts or free agency or whatever, one thing he and Chad Buchanan have been incredibly successful on is drafting. And we're not talking giving him first overall picks. You're talking 7th, 10th, 11th, 40th, 31st,
or like trying to pull off basically what the Suns did last year with the Kings, right? I mean, they traded three, you know, middling picks for the 7th or 8th pick. And yeah. Now Marquise Chris, like, may or may not be a good player. But I mean, he might have the highest upside in that draft. I mean, he's got one of the lowers. I mean, definitely
he just won player of the month. And who would have saw Marquise that coming Chris? Into this? Yeah, he won Rookie of the Month.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, well, yeah, who would have saw that coming into this draft?
Me, man, I was all over Marquise Chris.
But I mean, that's not the view from the outside was, and that's what the scouting department saw, and that's how you get successful in those markets.
Yeah, I mean, he came from up there Yeah, right, so you knew, right?
Damn, yeah, no, I saw him. I mean, he's a raw athlete. To me, what I saw was
he's literally like LeBron. Like, he is – people that size shouldn't be that athletic. Now, like, he's nowhere near IQ-wise where LeBron is, and he doesn't put in the effort. But, I mean, just like on a physical level, he
just
could be
profoundly
good.
Just on bounce size, yeah. No, when I saw him up close, you know, 10 feet away at Summer League this past summer, it was scary. He was a coiled-up spring. I'm sitting there in media row, 10 feet away from the guy as he jumps over and dunks on the entire Blazers Summer League roster. I mean, it was he's a coiled spring just ready to explode at all times. If you fit that with any kind of basketball skill. No, that's what I'm saying. If you fit that with any kind of basketball skill, it's a dominant force. That's what we saw this past month for him in Phoenix. It's insane. But that's what Portland needs to do. They've got...
Yeah.
Right now, what could turn into a top six pick? I don't think it's that much of a stretch to say that Portland could tank this into at least a top six pick. And then you're talking about you're getting ping pong balls that give you the opportunity to get into the top three. That's a lot. Now, you package that up with the number 20 pick and the 29th or 30th pick, depending on how it shakes out with the Cavs. You've got some ammunition. You take that last pick with the Cavs, and that pick from the Grizzlies, you move up from 20th to 16th or 17th. You know, whether that's a guy like Ivan Rabb or somebody else, just whoever they target, it's another young asset that you can develop. And everybody wants to make this argument about Damian Lillard's timeline and CJ McCollum's timeline. Well, you hamstrung yourself when you made those other contract offers. You locked yourself in to your only way to improve is through trades or through the draft. So shut up about the timeline. This is what you're going to have to do. I mean, that's the reality of it.
Yeah.
It's either that or you trade one of those two guys. That's literally how this has to work for anything to come together, barring a near miracle of a superstar landing in Portland for next to nothing.
Yeah, and that just... man, well, who's the general manager in OKC again?
Sam Presti, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, he should be fired for being the guy who did that. And like, that's really rare, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you won't see a Harden deal. You won't see a deal like that again. GMs, I mean, there's no more Billy Kings. It's just not going to happen. Everybody is GMs now, I think, are so obsessed with winning deals that you won't see a big deal for a long time. Unless it's so dysfunctional that it has to happen, like Carmelo in New York. Otherwise, these teams, unless an owner dictates it because money, fans, criminal stuff, whatever, that I think that's the only way you're going to see big guys dealt, especially with the way the new CBA is, because these guys get mega money for staying with their teams now.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I still think it'll happen because there's owners like like Mark Cuban, who's not. I don't think he's bad. I just think that he's aggressive. But yeah, you're right. I there's a conversation to be had about moving one or the other of CJ McCollum or Damian Lillard, but you don't want to have it unless you feel like you have to.
You can exhaust other options before you get there.
Right, exactly. And I think that's what essentially you're saying, right?
Yep.
Is option A, the what is ostensibly the best option is to build through the draft because that's what we've had success with, at least in theory. I'm sorry about the whole KD Odin thing, but generally
I'd still take Odin if Greg Odin's healthy. I still stick with Greg.
What are you talking about? Don't do this to me, Dan.
I'm telling you, man, I will go to my grave with Odin, LaMarcus, and Roy. If those three guys play together and are healthy, it's at least one ring. At least one ring. Those guys played 66 games together, fully healthy in total. They were 54-12 in those games, and they were kids. They were
Brandon Roy, Kevin Durant, LaMarcus Aldridge.
Don't get me wrong. That's a hell of a lot of offense and a dynamic team. But I think people forget how physically dominant Greg was. Think about what Joel Embiid is right now in today's NBA. Kevin, that's what Greg was.
Man, we can't do this, man. We can't do this. It's just Kevin Durant is one of the best scorers in NBA history. I mean,
Greg, I know.
He's nice. He's a nice potential center, you know. It's got some upside. Kevin Durant, like 35 points per game on any given season. But anyways, that's the type of guy who you go for. And Tyrus Thomas was picked right before LaMarcus, right? Or right after?
Portland traded Tyrus Thomas for LaMarcus Aldridge.
Right. So like
LaMarcus was the number two pick. Bargnani was number one.
I mean, I trust Portland's draft evaluation to a certain extent. Now
they also traded Randy Foy for Brandon Roy.
I'm starting to question Neil O'Shea's contract level
free
or player
agency
acquisition
has not
level.
Been his forte.
Yeah, right. One thing I've been thinking about for a while now, especially with Dwight Howard having the season he's having, you basically gave a max contract to Evan Turner. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you rather Dwight Howard have that right now?
From what I've been told, Portland went after Hassan Whiteside, and it didn't go well enough. They targeted Dwight Howard, and nothing materialized, and switched gears to...
I'm saying real max, though.
Contract. I believe that they offered to both Hassan and Dwight. I've heard both, but I've heard that it wasn't a full max for Dwight because of the PR and injury concerns.
Evan Turner, like, is that going to be better though? That's what I'm saying. Like,
I understand that the comparison, and without knowing totally what happened behind the scenes, because Portland guards this stuff better than literally anybody. It's hard to know for sure. But the fact that they turned and offered so much money to Evan Turner screams a trying to save face kind of move. And then the fact that they were linked so strongly with Pau Gasol, like, what is that going to solve? That screams PR move.
Yeah,
I mean, 37-year-old Pau Gasol
It's like Gar Forman winning the press conference.
It's Gar Forman winning the press conference. And that's what scares me about the way this team is headed, was that I was afraid that it would become more about winning the press conference and staying mediocre than it was about getting this team back to being competitive. I am not sitting here screaming and railing at Neil O'Shea to make this team a title contender right now. I understand that four starters were gone a year and a half ago. I was fully invested in, hey, this will take 3 years. Dame will be 27, 28 years old. Cool with that. So stop trying to mortgage the future to win the press conference. Do what you need to do to build this team to be successful. Not let's put, I understand there's a business side of this. And the thing is, in Portland, for those people that aren't aware, Portland was still selling out like crazy when they were crap. As long as you avoid DUIs, marijuana arrests, which isn't a problem in Portland anymore.
As long as you avoid the Jailblazers.
Exactly. As long as you avoid that stuff, dogfighting, you know, not Sebastian paying Telfair. Your bill at strip clubs, stuff like that. Keep that out of the news. And this city will fill it out. I mean, I believe they still There's hold no the record for the longest town. Sellout streak in professional sports in North America. I mean, it was 24, yeah. 25 seasons. That's the kind of love they have in this city. So you have to be really dumb to burn that bridge. You have to stack the stupidity so high that it's literally mind-boggling.
So this is sort of off track, but does that encourage mediocrity then?
I think so. I think sometimes it plays into a general manager, and this is every general manager not named R.C. Buford and Bob Myers right now, that they're going to, and it's natural, it's human instinct, that they're going to protect their job. There's only 30 of these jobs in the world. So, yeah, it's a natural instinct to make moves and to have stories put out and operate and conduct yourself in a way that protects you and your job. I get that.
Yeah.
I wish that wasn't the case, but that's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah.
But
man, I mean, trust the process.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've kind of beat this whole tanking thing to death. So it's one of those things where this is where I hope they go. But the front office thing and the relationship with players is kind of like where I wanted to steer this, considering what's happening in New York with the Knicks and Charles Oakley, particularly James Dolan. It got me to thinking, if you're the Portland Trailblazers, and I'm not saying Paul Allen is James Dolan by any means. For almost entirely, Paul Allen has been fantastic as an owner for the Trailblazers. He does what needs to get done. He spends money when he needs to spend money. So totally on board with it. That's my caveat. But what player in Blazers history could get away with doing what Charles Oakley did? Who and have the fans behind him? Now, you're on the outside, and when we kind of talk this over a little bit, you threw out a couple names here. If you're looking at Portland, who's the guy that you think that would do this and be able to get away with it?
Well, so I suggested I first said Zach Randolph, but you hadn't finished your question. I just got a little bit eager. And then you said, well, okay, like Portland people have to love him. And I was like, oh, okay, well, it's not Zach Randolph. So then I said Rasheed Wallace, but I mean, like that's not necessarily the prettiest relationship either. Now I'm thinking maybe Arvydas Sabonis.
See, Sabas is one of the guys that popped into my head. But
I mean, here's the thing, like Bill Walton, right, could kick anyone's butt. He just wouldn't. I'm trying to think of someone who would kick someone's ass and it would be okay, because that's Charles Oakley, right?
Yeah. It's such a unique situation where you've got the tough guy. He's beloved. And he was, for the most part, a winner with the Knicks. He is a cult hero with the Knicks. The Pistons, they have that guy, you know.
Does it have to be a big man?
It doesn't like necessarily Clyde Drexler, have to be a big man.
Does he qualify?
See, I wouldn't go Clyde. If I was going to go, the really crappy thing about this is the two guys that jumped off the page to me immediately are no longer with us. That's Maurice Lucas and Jerome Kersey. And then the third guy I thought of, Kevin Duckworth, not a part of this world anymore. It's kind of crappy to think of, but it's those guys that Portland really lacks right now. And that's kind of where I kind of tied this back to. On Portland's roster right now, the tough guy or the toughest guy that's probably on it is Myers Leonard. Now, Nurkic could be that guy. Clip of Nurkic backing down Morris and Morris flopping and him just kind of laying it in and then grabbing the ball and handing it to him, I've watched it like 1,000 times in the past 24 hours. Because I don't know. I like that.
I don't know, man.
I think that little bit of nasty.
You know, I've talked a little bit with Adam Mares, who writes over at Denver Stiffs, yep, and for Vice. And he's, you know, one of the smartest guys who covers any team, but certainly one of the smartest guys who covers the Denver Nuggets. And he has made a very compelling case to me. And I have backed it up by doing my own research. And Nurkic, I think, is mentally fragile. I mean, over the last couple of months, over the last like 3 months, after being benched for Jokic, he has gained like 25 pounds, it looks like. He has stopped caring at all on the defensive end. His rim protection metrics, he allows like 60+ percent, 62%. Yeah. Right, at the rim. He keeps backing guys down, and he tries to have a finesse type of post game. Despite the fact it's like, dog, you're 300 pounds. Like, just bowl him over, you know? But he does little flip shots and like reverse shots and stuff. So he shoots 41% effective field goal percentage, rather than like trying to finish through contact, which he could certainly do. So you look at him physically, and you would hope that he was that guy. But I'm not sure that in his head he is.
And that's kind of why I wanted to tie those two things together, in that if you look around the league, there, number one, there aren't too many of those guys, which I really don't like. I like a little bit of nasty. It was like, oh, the game's cleaner and prettier. But yeah, I don't know. Call me old fashioned. Just because I'm a big guy myself, I like the intimidation factor. I like
a blend of the two. Yeah, I mean, I like LeBron.
I love beautiful basketball, but I also like the idea that some 180-pound point guard isn't going to just dance into my lane and hit a Eurostep layup without getting put on his butt. Like, it's just there's something to be said, to, at least to me, in that that's just not something you let happen. Like, I love Westbrook's ferocity, but if I'm a 7-footer in the NBA, you can absolutely be sure that I'm going to Zaza Pachulia you. You're going to catch elbows. You're going to catch shoulders. And then I'm going to stand over you. And then I'm going to laugh when you say you're going to get me back.
I just don't think I just don't think that people should be getting hurt.
No.
But I would tiptoe up to that line, probably. It's like, if there was a way of it being like Pokemon, right, where you could just take your wounded Squirtle to a Poke Center and heal him afterwards, like, you know, they could have Shanks out there and I'd probably be cool with it. But like, I just, you know, when you're 40 years old and you hobble away from the game, I just, like, you know, I hate to see what goes on with the NFL with people ending up with like their brain splattered all over the wall.
Yeah, no, it's a different,
like, I
there's definitely a difference,
you know,
between...
I don't want painkillers. I don't want, like, you know, limps and stuff. But if you can get a little closer to that threshold, I'm probably in favor of it.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a difference between laying some wood on somebody and hurting somebody. Now, I'm never
sure
anybody's ever followed me on Twitter or talked to me or been around me during games. I don't care if you're my favorite player on the face of the planet. If I see you undercut somebody, I want to slice your Achilles. Like, I just like I had it happen to me, and my knee is literally in shambles because of it. So when I see that play, to me, it's like the nastiest, dirtiest thing you could possibly do. Defenseless up in the air, you upend somebody. I mean, it's just, it's not good. It's never good. And I'd never encourage that. But at the same time, when I see somebody get wrapped up in midair, like give them the bear hug, I have no problem with that. Just a good foul and wrap them up.
And you guys up in Portland, I mean, that really, I think, is what set Bill Walton on the trajectory that he ended up. In high school, he was laid out on sort of like a cheap play, and it healed wrong. And I think that was the beginning of the whole nightmare injury thing. I think that misaligned him. And snowballed. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, especially from a Portland perspective, who, you guys have seen some awful injuries and awful injury luck. I just, like, you know, I laying someone out, you know, but I conceptually, I like it too. I'm down with that, but if someone's up in the air and you lay someone out and they land on the hardwood and crack their head open, it's not worth it to me at that point.
Yeah, no, that's the difference between, you know, malicious contact and just being a tough guy. And
sure,
that's where like stuff like Draymond Green kicking somebody in the nuts, that's malicious contact. Like that's the kind of stuff that I don't know. I guess there's a unique code that I live by. Like there's certain rules. Like I have no problem with guys getting physical, little elbow in the back on a hard screen and stuff like that. I just don't like, I just kind of giggle like, oh man.
I mean, hand checking doesn't bother me.
Yeah. None of that stuff does.
In fact, it's a little confusing to me that specifically was taken out of the league, but there's a line to be tread there. And I think you're right that it has gone away a little bit. Although I think we might see a little bit of a resurgence. I mean, Joel Embiid is physically dominant and he's incredibly skilled, but same with Shaq. Like I think the size and the ferocity comes first. And then if you can add essentially a point guard's touch to that, then you're really cooking. And then LeBron James, I mean, is a freight train. And there was a 73 win team during the regular season who blew a 3-1 lead. I'm not sure if you heard about it. And I'm not sure if you've heard a joke like this before. They lost because they were physically outmatched by perhaps the most physically dominant player ever, certainly up there. So I think that might be coming back a little bit. But right now, I think you're right. The pendulum has swung towards finesse, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, it's a long roundabout way of kind of linking the whole Oakley Dolan thing in Portland. But yeah, it's this weird thing where bringing in Nurkic, I think, has a lot of undertones around it. Yes, it allows the Blazers to experiment. Yes, it allows them to restructure contracts or the salary as it pertains to going forward. Yes, they get a first-round draft pick, but it also gives them something that I think they were lacking in that fundamental size and just being big. I mean, you're talking about Portland, and they're just not a big team. I mean, Myers Leonard is a big guy. But beyond that, I mean, CJ is undersized for his position. Dame, he's built for his position, but he's not a big guy. Crabbe is really kind of a thinner
guy. He doesn't play
guy.
Like a big guy.
No. None of these guys play. I would say that of the guys that play bigger than they are, Mason Plumlee tried to. Al-Farouq Aminu is capable of it. Maurice Harkless can play a little bit bigger than he is. Myers Leonard can play like a really big dude.
I mean, Harkless is really big. Aminu is probably the only guy there.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. It goes to show you how few of those guys Portland has. You look at a team like Cleveland, who, I mean, other than, you know, Kyrie and some of the other guards, those guys bang you all night long, up and down that roster. It's just brutal. For all the finesse talk in Golden State, KD's huge. I mean, that's a nightmare to deal with. San Antonio is full of guys.
Draymond has that LeBron thing going on, too.
I mean, it's just...
And Iggy, man.
Iggy's a freaking nightmare. And that's kind of what I keep going back to in Portland. That, you know, I always love going back to the Popovich line, man. Give me some nasty. I want to see some nasty in this team. And I think Nurkic can be that guy, or has the potential to be that guy. And I think that's an underlying theme to hear that Portland could benefit from.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. I think from the outside looking in, I perhaps wouldn't get your hopes up about Nurkic being that guy because...
Quit dashing my hopes. They haven't even built up yet.
Well, look, I think that hope is what you should have because I think there's a real possibility that he could be something and it could be great, especially for the Portland Trailblazers. But I think that ostensibly it appears that likelihood is higher than what it probably is in actuality.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm forever the pessimist, but I like to look at these things and see, or try to find something else besides, you know, what's kind of on the surface, not necessarily digging for that extra nugget, but just some kind of something else out there that feeds my own.
Digging for that extra Nuggets player.
Exactly. Hey. You see, you brought it out. But yeah, yeah. I like to feed my own personal conspiracy theories on stuff like this. So, but we're running up against it here, hitting up close to an hour. So we'll go ahead and kind of wrap it here. Chris, I want to thank you for coming on, man. Go ahead and drop all the plugs you want.
Yeah, well, first it was nice coming on. I wish I had a little bit more time to talk trash about Mason Plumlee, but there's always
I
know,
steered it away,
time.
Man. I buried it.
Yeah, it's probably not good to mock the recently roster deceased. So, anyways, I'm Chris Axman. I'm the head honcho. What did you say? Big Kahuna?
The Grand Poobah.
Yeah. The one guy described me as the patron saint of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. It's blogtalkradio.com/ABPN. You can find us there. They've been kind enough to feature us along with the the other you know SB Nation stuff like that. And you know, that's what we try to be for the podcasting realm. We have a podcast for every team except for the Atlanta Hawks at this point. Either published 25 published and, four that are far in production. So make sure you check them all out, regardless of whether you're a Trailblazers fan or a fan of the NBA. If you want to know something about a team, every one of these podcasts are great. As you know, the Portland podcast is awesome. Anyways, you can find me at Almighty Ballin on Twitter, and I'm the host of Almighty Ballin NBA show. I try to have conversations like this on my show. So make sure you check it out and keep listening to Trailing Blazers.
Yeah, make sure you definitely keep listening to Trailing Blazers, because I have kind of a vested interest in that. But, you know, Chris, thanks again for coming on, man. And for Chris, I'm your host, Dan Morang, and we'll be back here with Taylor Danforth once he gets a little bit more settled in. So for all the guys, thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to GEICO than saving you money, GEICO also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the GEICO app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite!
GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.